Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Winchow. How are you doing, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
Great. This week, we have plenty to talk about, especially due to Tesla's 2019 shareholders meeting that brought us a ton of news. And I think the most important news that came out of the meeting itself kind of went under the radar. I mean, we posted about it, but there's not many media that picked it up. It was you needed to read between the lines a little bit to get that news. And I don't know, maybe we are missing something and we are inferring things that that's not there. But I'm pretty sure it's going to happen. And what I'm talking about is that Tesla is getting into battery cell production. For some of you that are not following Tesla closely enough, you might think of it, but Tesla is already in battery production. Not exactly. They definitely do work on battery cell chemistry, but in terms of the production of the cells themselves, it's very much still Panasonic that doing the cells for the Tesla's vehicles. They are the sole suppliers for Tesla vehicles right now. Even at Gigafactory 1, even though Tesla owned the Gigafactory itself, there's a place inside where it's just for Panasonic, it's just Panasonic employees, and they are completely responsible for the battery cell production. And of course, if you've been following what happened earlier this year, we thought that they were at least at 35 gigawatt hour of production at the Gigafactory right now in terms of cells. But Elon Musk says that even though Panasonic has deployed the capacity for 35 gigawatt hours, they haven't really been able to maintain that production rate, which has been frustrating for Tesla because it created some kind of bottleneck for the company in terms of all the different products that need battery cells. So the solution would be to get either another supplier, still work with Panasonic to increase battery production, or do it yourself, which Tesla has never really given any type of indication that he would do until now. Well, the Maxwell acquisition earlier this year that started earlier this year and was completed last month was an indication in itself, but what they acquired from Maxwell were only part of the battery cell technology, which is their dry electrode technology. So there was still a possibility that they would simply license that technology to Panasonic's production. So they would incorporate that into the battery cell chemistry that they get produced by Panasonic. So that could have been still the case. But at the meeting on Tuesday, there were a bunch of very specific comments that if we look into, make it seems like they were looking into doing that themselves. We're going to get through them real quick here. Did you watch the meeting?
Sir? I listened to it. I was driving for part of it.
You were driving? Okay. Yeah, and watching would have been good on that because there was looks between the three of them, because I'm talking about here. Elon was on stage with JB, and they also brought Drew Baglino, who was a longtime executive at Tesla. And all right, so started out really with Elon talking about the entire product roadmap at Tesla, which is, of course, quite busy right now with still ramping up Model 3 production, Model Y coming, which we're going to be as big or bigger than Model 3 production, Tesla pickup truck, Tesla Roadster, Tesla Semi. There's just a ton of product coming up the line that going to need immense amount of cell, massive amount of cell. So they're talking about they need to do whatever they can to ensure the scale at the fastest rate possible, and that is all based on battery cell production. So Elon hinted that they might get into mining. That was the only thing he said. They might get into the mining business. So that was the first indication. Then JB said, added, we need a large-scale solution for battery cell production. So when he said that put a red flag in my hair, because wasn't Gigafactory 1 that solution that I thought everyone thought it was? And then, do I have the comment from Drew here? Oh, yeah. Okay. Elon commented on the Maxwell acquisition, and he said, I quote, we think this is really quite strategic. This is a very important technology that would have a big effect on the cost and scale of cell production, both reducing the cost and capital required to scale cell production. So he's saying that Maxwell technology is vital to having a bigger cell production capacity with little investment, which, of course, Tesla wants to limit its capital expenditure. But then I think the most interesting one, the most interesting comment was by Drew, who said specifically that they have learned from their partners, without naming anybody, but pretty sure that's Panasonic. They have learned a lot from Panasonic's battery cell production. And they said that they have their own solution now. They want to have their own solution to battery cell production again. And when he said that, JB looked at him with a weird smile, was like, be careful not to say anything there. And Elon had just said not to get the cat out of the bag. So I think that cat is Tesla having its own battery cell production. From there, we can speculate what that will look like. Gigafactory 1, I think Tesla is very much locked in with Panasonic. They have contracts in place to buy everything that Panasonic produces there. So I think that's probably out of the picture. But Tesla never announced any battery cell partners for the Shanghai Gigafactory 3. What do you think?
Well, on Gigafactory 3, we assumed that Tesla would find a local partner like SK or, you know, some battery company we've never...
CATL is the biggest one.
Yeah. So we assume that, but, you know, that could always be part of Tesla's plan in China. They could also partner with, you know, somebody we've never heard of and build something else. My question with this is, like, how is Panasonic dealing with this? Because, you know, here they've kind of been a good partner for Tesla, we assume, from the outside for a long time, and now Tesla is hinting at starting its own battery production line and being a competitor of Panasonic. I wonder.
Yeah,
I mean, they've already started making partnerships with other automotive companies. I think Toyota was the big
Toyota,
yeah, the big one recently.
Definitely.
So, you know, maybe they see the writing on the wall. Maybe they're, you know, there's no, like, you know, Tesla's like, all right, we're going to partner up with you until 2020, and then after 2020. All bets are off. You know, there's some kind of deal like that for the Gigafactory or the Gigafactory, and also they have a solar business with them in New York. So it's a lot of moving parts there. It would, you know, obviously it would make sense for Tesla to begin manufacturing its own batteries. It clearly needs them. It has a lot of technology. The Maxwell purchase kind of brings that, a little bit of that in house, and I'm sure they've been, as they say, learning from their partners. So, wouldn't be surprising. Unfortunately, sometimes things don't work exactly as Tesla planned, so it might be a longer ramp than they're planning for. But
that's a safe bet.
So I don't know. It just makes sense. Like, you know, if Tesla wants to be this huge. Electric vehicle company and stationary storage company, they're going to have the best batteries at the lowest price in the world. And, you know, they're talking about the scale, unbeknownst to humans before this, the scale is going to have to be off the charts. So I guess, it makes sense for them to bring it in house.
Yeah, it does. My best case scenario would be like Tesla starting a joint venture, a complete joint venture with Panasonic. I think that would make sense in order to offset some of, even though they say that the capital expenditure needed for scaling the battery cell production with the Maxwell technology is not as significant as it would be with other technology. I'm sure it's still going to be in the billions if they want to achieve gigawatt hours capacity annually. So, maybe like some kind of, instead of just having a supplier client relationship with Panasonic, maybe set a joint venture with them, own some of the capacity of production, and bring to the table your new recently acquired dry electrode technology, and Panasonic can bring in some capital and their expertise in producing battery cells. I think that would be the best case scenario. I feel like it's probably something that Tesla will at least explore. But we should know exactly what's going on that front later this year when Tesla plans to hold a battery and powertrain investor day. So similar to the investor day earlier this year with the autonomy day about the Tesla self-driving effort. Now it's going to be about battery and powertrain.
So how many shares do you have to own to get invited to investor day? Just curious.
No idea. Pretty sure you could at this point. what's his name? Galileo?
Yeah.
I forget his nice name.
Hyperchange.
From Hyperchange. He went there, and I don't think he's like that big of a shareholder, but he presents himself as someone who represents
retail
shareholders, so maybe that helped him get in. So other people are some analysts and some hedge fund managers and other institutional investors. So of course, any kind of retail investor doesn't come close to that. But
we represent the retail investor.
We can just say that now.
Sure.
And we are investors ourselves too, so yeah, be fair. But at the same time, it's all streaming, so not sure just how much is not shown in the stream that it's worth being there for.
What's your what's your break even price right now?
$196. Nice. So I'm back in the green now with the ramp up. You're also back in the green, right? You're a little bit higher than me. No, not yet. You're 230. Yeah. Okay, I thought you were much lower.
I bought a lot at over 250. And then I bought a lot more under 200, like at 180 something. So the middle of that is 230.
All right. Well, I'm sure you're going to be back in the green soon enough.
Hope so.
The other big news that came out of the meeting, I think, was regarding the Tesla network. So Tesla's goal to achieve a robo-taxi fleet with a ride-sharing system without drivers. That Tesla network, the launch of the ride-sharing service, was always contingent on Tesla achieving full self-driving. They never showed any type of interest to launching the service with human drivers, with just letting the Tesla drivers participate in the process, other than just sending out their own vehicles to be used by others. Now, at the meeting, when asked by a shareholder, Elon Musk was the first time open to the idea to launch the service before that and to learn about ride sharing through that ahead of achieving full self-driving. So that was interesting. That's basically a direct competitor to Uber and Lyft, basically. So for the first time, was open to that. And I think that has pretty big implication because that's a huge market to start with. And Tesla has, of course, the brand advantage here. They already have a significant brand, and they have already hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who downloaded their app. So if the ride-sharing aspect is included in the same app, you already have a giant market for it. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think people would be excited to drive in a Tesla. I know Tesla owners are. It would also be kind of cool if they did, like, a Turo, where you could, you know, show up in San Diego and borrow somebody's Tesla for a day. I don't know if that's going to be realistic. I don't know how the insurance works on those things. But, you know, Toro's doing it. Why can't Tesla do this, something like that?
Yeah, there's plenty of Teslas on Toro already, so you want to do that. But, in terms of the ride-sharing thing, that's for sure it's an advantage also that you get driven around in a Tesla,
right,
even if it's not by a robot Tesla, it's an actual Tesla owner. And so that's interesting. I assume that the price is going to be higher, of course, because of that. It's like ordering a Uber Select or Uber Black or something. And I think it's great also for EV adoption because it's going to educate people about electric vehicles. If they are not used to be driven around in an EV, then it's an opportunity to talk to people about it. And all around great. And also a great impact for Tesla's revenue potential. I mean, Uber is worth what, like $80 billion or something?
Right.
If they can just get 5% of those market share, it's a great impact for Tesla, I think. All right, moving on. Elon gave some type of timelines update for some of the roadmap at Tesla, the product roadmap, including the pickup truck and the semi truck. We already talked about Tesla pushing the semi truck production to next year. It was already supposed to be in 2019. Earlier this year, they confirmed that it's not realistic in 2019. It's going to be next year in 2020. During the meeting, Elon even said they plan to bring it to production late 2020. So that's even further out than we thought originally. And I think it's starting to get an issue a little bit because, like I said before, Tesla cannot push that indefinitely, the Semi, because they took thousands of reservations already. And it's thousands of reservations from our commercial customers. So it's not just someone looking to upgrade their cars here. It's someone that operates a fleet and they have a strict schedule to update their fleet with new vehicles. And if Tesla slip on the schedule, then they're going to have to find another solution because they really have an expiration date on those fleets, or they try to do the maintenance fee becomes much higher if they try to keep a vehicle in the fleet for a longer period of time and everything like that. So I think Tesla should really try to respect the schedule on that front. Not that the other consumer vehicles like the Roadster, the Model Y, or the pickup truck are not important either. Like they can let that slip. I'm just saying the difference with regular consumers versus a commercial consumer. As for the pickup truck, we still don't have a production timeline, but he did reiterate that he wants to unveil it this summer. And if we have to assume, like, because the way he showed the product lineup, he showed the Model Y, then the pickup truck, then the semi truck. So we know that the Model Y is, of course, the next priority for Tesla after the Model 3's ramp up is completed. They go into Model Y fall 2020, follow next year. And then he showed the pickup truck. So we have to assume maybe the pickup truck is planned around the same time. I don't know, like, or in between the end of the year, which is the Tesla Semi, and the fall. So like Q4 something, Q4 2020. Is that too helpful?
Yes, it is, always. No. I don't know. Like, the truck is obviously a big departure from what they've done before, right? Like, the Model Y looks a lot like the Model 3. But the Cyberpunk truck, which looks like nothing that's probably ever been on the road, will probably have a lot of new features that Tesla has to build from scratch. Mm-hmm. I think whatever they're preaching is probably going to be a very optimistic timeline on that. And unfortunately, the market right now is really for pickups is really hot. We just watched GM's Royce talk about how they're leaving sales on the table because they can't make them fast enough. Mm-hmm. And those are the internal combustion versions. But
mm-hmm.
You can't help but wonder if, like, Tesla, instead of making a sedan, went after the truck space, you know, made like a Model X without a back on it or something. Mm-hmm. So can't come soon enough. I kind of wish it would maybe be a little bit more like the Model Y or something, or at least on that same platform so that it could come out quicker. But yeah, we don't know. We'll find out, I guess, this summer. Is that when?
Yeah. And that's what I think is important in terms of the timeline to production. Historically, Tesla, when they show a car, the next year they want to bring it production. That has been their goal historically. Aside maybe for Model X, Model S and X, but Model 3, Model Y, and now with the pickup truck, Tesla unveiled it in March. They want to for the Model Y, they want to launch it next year in fall. Model 3, they unveil it in 2016, also in March, I think. Yeah, and they want to unveil it to launch it by the summer of 2017. So it would make sense if Tesla wants to show the car in the summer of 2019, the pickup truck, maybe they want to launch it by the end of next year. So we'll see.
Speaking of late deliveries, Roadster also got a delay, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, well, it wasn't on the product roadmap.
Right.
Last week, we talked about Elon, like, tempering expectation a little bit on the timeline of Roadster, saying it's not a priority. and now it's not even in the roadmap. So I'd be a little bit worried about that. And again, you cannot. I know it's not a priority, but I don't think you can delay that indefinitely either, because it took a bunch of reservation. People paid $50,000 to $250,000 to reserve that car, so you cannot push that too far either. And also, they used it to in the referral program to boost the referral program a lot. So, if you want to respect that too at the same time, and of course, I'm a little biased on that since I have a few of them coming, but it's still a point that, like, you cannot just use that to boost your referral program and then, all right, we're gonna deliver that whenever now. I still think it's coming. It's just I'll be surprised if it's in 2020. Probably more likely in 2021. Probably summer 2021 would make more sense, I think.
Yeah, and I have a feeling also that the referral program people aren't going to be the first ones to get those off the line. I have a feeling that people who pay $250,000 are probably going to be the first people to get their Roadsters. That's just my feeling. Also, I have I'm still waiting for the Tesla's referral Powerwalls. It's been
from three years ago,
and actually, I just got a call from Tesla this week telling me that they could do it, you know, in a month or so, but they don't have any of the Founder Series Powerwalls, which are basically just red Powerwalls, red plastic on the front.
Mm-hmm.
So it might not get done this year. So that's how the referral program, you know, kind of like you get the extras off the end, kind of situation, which I understand, but it's also kind of a bummer.
Yeah. Still in the meeting, real quick. Elon also mentioned that it will not be long before Tesla has a 400-mile range car. He was talking about the battery and the pace of innovation on the battery side, just how fast it improved, and not just on the battery side, but on entire powertrain efficiency, because their most recent boost in range was especially for the more efficient drivetrain that Tesla unveiled on the Model S next, which boosts the Model S range officially to 370 miles. So they're pretty damn close to 400 miles already. But he said through 400 miles one is coming soon.
When I saw your,
which is kind of weird.
When I saw your post, I thought Jamie had written it, because Jamie is the advocate of you don't need that many miles in electric vehicles, because he constantly had dealt with, when he was a Tesla store person, he had constantly dealt with people who wanted like 1,000 miles of range, and he was like, you just don't need that.
Yeah, I mean, people took the post the wrong way. I don't see that it's bad to have 400 miles of range. I'd take more range whenever, for sure. I think it's bad to always create that thing that we always need more range. Like, all right, when the 400 miles comes out, like, oh, there's going to be plenty of people that think, yeah, 400 miles is pretty good, but I'm going to wait for the 500 mile one. So I'm saying that that's what you don't really need. Like, most people don't need 400 miles of range. There's some people that are gonna need it. Some people that just have crazy mileage needs per week, like whatever, for business or for whatever reason. People that drive especially long distances in the colder areas, that can be
and stuff.
If we want to tow boats, but then even then, like the current Tesla vehicles are not maybe ideal for that. So, unless like a pickup truck is coming, something like that, then it makes more sense. But I think for Tesla's current vehicle, like my idea was like the Model S. It's the Model S is the one that has the longest range right now, and you want to push it further. With a 370 miles Model S, you can do already a lot of things. And that's my goal. If we shouldn't focus too much on that range, like you can get, otherwise there's going to be a large part of the population that would just never buy an EV. They just keep waiting for more. And but it's still good. And what I like about this improvement is that it likely won't necessarily be more energy capacity that's going to be added to the car. Most like, if you talk about battery improvement, if you talk about energy density improvement, then it's most likely going to be reducing the weight of the car. And with the same energy capacity, you're going to be able to be more efficient. That I like. If you can get cars more efficient, but then that also means that you can get a car with an even smaller energy capacity, being even lighter, having more range, like some kind like a 60 kilowatt hour Model 3, for example, with a 10% improvement in energy density, that would be an awesome car. Would be cheaper, would be lighter, would be more fun to drive. And it would still get probably over, what, the 250, 260 miles of range, which is great. So all things to consider about when we talk about range, I think.
Yeah, and the other side of the coin is that with Tesla rolling out more and faster superchargers in more, you know, rural areas, nobody wants to sit in a car for 6 hours at a time, right? Nobody, nobody. I mean, certainly they're the people who, you know, have a diaper on and they go on the crazy.
Yeah, the number of people that wrote me about that when they got I wrote that post like, oh, you don't know nothing, Fred. I can sit 6 hours in my car and I piss in a bottle. Let's see that. All right, maybe you do that, but most people don't do that. So
I guess maybe more people do that than I thought. There was that one.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, maybe I might be wrong, but I think that
astronaut those people. Woman, remember? She was in Texas and she drove to Florida and she had a diaper on because she needed.
Yeah, I've heard of that, yeah.
So,
she's in the minority. Please tell me that's not the average Texan or Florida people.
Well, you know. Anyway, my original point was, though, that as superchargers get faster and superchargers get more plentiful, they're on, like, every, you know, road, like, you know, when they become, like, gas stations and they're at every exit, then all of a sudden the I need 1,000 miles of range kind of falls apart because you just, you know, 3 hours, 4 hours, then you pull over for 10, 15 minutes. By the time you're done with going to the bathroom and getting a snack, you're ready to go again. And so that's kind of like, those are the two things that make the 1,000 mile, you know, like everybody says, well, I have to go to the woods and I have to carry this thing. But, you know, gas stations exist in the middle of nowhere. I'm sure charging stations, which don't require human beings, can also exist in the middle of nowhere too.
Yeah, for speaking of for Canadian friends, the Elon again promised that the Trans-Canadian Highway is going to be covered with supercharger. Of course, he made that promise a few times now. So at that point, it's clearly going to be filed, and we'll believe it when we see it. Yeah, because there would be a bunch of supercharger in the middle of nowhere if they do complete that Trans-Canadian Highway, because that whole North Ontario, Manitoba type of part, this has to be a lot of them in between major cities.
Yeah, I mean, they were talking about going from Sydney or one side of Australia to Perth, and that goes across some serious like nowhere. So if they're talking about doing east to west in Australia, then Canada is probably cosmopolitan compared to that area.
Tell you, the north of Ontario, there's a long stretch of it with a bunch of nothing. There's still some cool cities there, or town. Is Thunder Bay a city or town?
That's northern Ontario, but you don't need to go northern Ontario to get across.
Yeah, you need to. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, there's a bunch of lakes and things there.
Yeah, but
you need to go around those.
That's not northern Ontario, though. That's like.
Well, I'm not sure if. Well, it's everything north. It's like New York. Upstate. Like everything north of New York City is upstate New York. Everything north of Toronto is northern Ontario.
I'm looking at the map and I see like Hudson Bay, and that's the north of Ontario. So.
Oh yeah, but that's literally nothing right there. there's still in between that and Thunder Bay. It's all like northern Ontario. There's nothing there too. Or of course, we're gonna have that one guy that lives there and watch Electric that say, "Hey guys, that's not fair. I live there." And I mean, we appreciate you, but you live in a sparsely populated area, dude. All right. Still on the there was a ton of news from that shareholders meeting. Solar Roof V3, the third version, third iteration of Solar Roof, is being completed right now. And the new information that we have on it that's interesting is regarding the cost, the price of it. Elon said that it's going to cost the same thing as a comp shingle roof, plus the cost, plus the cost of the electricity bill over the period of power generation of the solar roof. The difference with that, you might think, I've heard that before. You did, but when they first announced the solar roof, it was talking about a comparable type roof, same price as a comparable type roof as the other solar tiles plus the electricity bill. A comparable type roof to the solar tiles will be a tile roof. Terracotta tiles, Spanish style tile, just concrete black tile, things like that. Not a comp shingle roof. That's not comparable. Comp shingle is basically the cheapest roof that you can have at like $4 per square foot. So it's not the same thing at all. So that's really a bold statement about the cost of the solar roof. And at the same time, after reporting that, we got some people that reached out to us that recently got quotes from Tesla for solar roof. And that's where we get a very different view of the pricing of the product. Because let me show you here. I tried to get the screen share going. It's now we're talking about V2. So it's the current generation of the one that's offered. So we got the quote here. And it's going for $85,000, the purchase price for this specific roof, which is a 1,800 square foot roof. $64,600 for the roof itself, solar roof tiles and with solar cells in them and not solar cells. In this specific configuration, though, I want to note that the owner is... the configuration, at least that Tesla suggested him, has a high mix of solar cells tiles versus non-solar cells. You see here on the roof, the blue ones are the one with the solar cells in them. So almost the entire roof, except for a few sections, are. And of course, that will increase the generation capacity of the roof because throughout the day, the sun will eat different sections and still produce more electricity. They're looking at a 9-kilowatt system. So a pretty powerful system for the size of the roof, but it comes at a cost. That said, that $85,000 cost also includes a power wall for $10,000. Looks like Tesla is trying to just match power walls for every those orders because it's also, of course, going to increase the amount of solar you can use generated from your roof, which, again, is going to affect the price of, the overall value of the roof. Another $10,000 was quoted for roof and site repairs, which probably means the undoing the current roof, which the owner needs to get done anyway. All right, so crazy expensive. But in the quote that we got, Tesla tried to compare it to a premium roof proof solar. So it's assumed that the homeowner needs the new roof anyway, so he's going to get one. Again, unlike what Elon said at the meeting about the shingle roof, they're talking about a premium roof here, so a equivalent in style roof, like a tile roof here, which they quote at $37,000. But then you get that nice looking roof and everything, and you cover it with solar panels, which I don't really get. So if you plan to get solar panels, you're probably going to get a shingle roof there anyway, and that's going to be a lot less expensive. But Tesla then value the 9-kilowatt system at $29,600, which I think might be a little bit high. I don't know if you have any comment on that, Seth.
Yeah, usually panels are about $1 per watt, so that's a $9,000 just the panels alone.
But I think it includes the $29,000 probably includes installation.
Right. So you have install and you have the inverter and the little maximizers. So that kind of puts it to $2 or $3 per watt, so it's a little bit of a premium.
Okay, so you have that. It looks like it's on the expensive side. Then the roof also looks on the expensive side. Power wall, of course, the same price here, and the roof repair the same price. So $87,000, which is more expensive, they claim to the price here. But of course, the net cost. The net price Tesla is what Tesla is pushing here, because for the solar roof system, you get a $15,000 tax credit versus the $11,000 tax credit, which I assume is because the cost is simply higher for the solar portion of things since it's included in the roof system, unlike the solar panels. And then they calculate, of course, the value of energy over the 30 years, which is the period that Tesla guarantee power generation for 30 years. So that adds up to $65,000, which for a solar roof ends up to a $4,000 net cost over 30 years. So you get a new roof for $4,000 over 30 years. It's the very optimistic way to look at it, but...
Yeah, I mean, so you're getting a few other things, like the roof is very strong. The glass is, you know, hail proof or whatever. There was that video of the tiles breaking. You're getting a power wall. You know, there's some intangibles there. You're getting kind of, I don't want to say it's future proof because nothing's future proof, but like you're kind of getting the next wave of technology. You're going to be an early adopter. So I don't know. There's some intangibles. There's some like bragging rights there.
It looks cool. That, I think one of the intangibles, it looks very cool.
Yeah. No.
If you like, we also posted another post with new images of the custom fittings that they made for a sort of, because like the tiles themselves, they look cool. But then if they, the fittings in between them are not the same style, it's just, it doesn't mesh with the design. So if you look right now, I think I'm still sharing my screen. We see that all the like matte black fittings, and same things with the vents. If you have vents coming out of your roof, and even skylight, Tesla's has made custom ones that just mesh with the aesthetic of the system.
Yeah, the flashing is really nice. Yeah, that black flashing is really nice.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me just remove that screen share now. Moving on from the solar roof, which we're gonna keep reporting on this in the coming months as Tesla start the trials for the version 3, and we're gonna try to see if the quotes come down a little bit in price. Sorry, just let me get back. All right, earlier today we reported on the deliveries. So we've been following closely Tesla's end of the quarter push as usual. And this time Tesla is pushing for a record number in deliveries, which the last time was 90,000. The last record back in Q4, 2018. Over the past few weeks, we've reported on Musk telling his the employees at Tesla that they were within reach of the record for this quarter. Last week, we reported on Tesla sending out, telling their employees, at least in North America, that if they do deliver 33,000 cars by the end of the month, they're going to get a bonus, even more so if they deliver 36,000. So we've been following the progress toward that. And some sources tell us that in North America, Tesla is delivering cars, at a rate of 1,000 a day. Approximately 1,000 a day, which is very good. And those, that's 1,000 a day throughout the month of June, just for North America. So, of course, there were deliveries before that. There was actually another 33,000 in North America alone before June. And there's, of course, overseas market that also contributing to that goal. But in the next week alone, Tesla has 7,000 delivery, almost 7,000 delivery planned for the next 7 days in North America. So the sentiment right now with an employee is that the goal is very much within reach. They can do it, at least the 33,000 goal, maybe even the 36. We'll see about that in the next few days, because the last week of the month is always the craziest one. It's easier for them to convince consumers to take delivery, like to book deliveries by the time, because everyone wants it by the end of the quarter in order to, especially in the U.S. where they get the federal tax credit at $3,700 right now, and it's going to be cut in half as July 1st. Though historically, last time that it was cut in half, Tesla compensated the next quarter with a direct discount instead of a tax credit. So, well, a reduction in price. So we'll see if they do the same thing this time or not. It's not. It's never guaranteed, so we'll see. But I'm feeling very confident that Tesla is going to reach that goal and have another record quarter. Based on my sources right now.
And any chance that they blow it out and hit 100,000?
That'd be surprising to me.
So you
just on the production.
So you think 90,000 and some change?
Yeah, 90,000, 91,000 would be great. If they do get to like 92, 93, that'd be awesome. But just 90 would be great, I think. You have to put it in perspective right now. Like, even if they don't achieve it, like 1,000 deliveries a day right now, Tesla is delivering more electric vehicles in North America than GM in 3 days. More electric vehicles in North America in 3 days than GM does in a month. So keep that in mind. All right, let's move on from Tesla real quick. Hydrogen stations. So that was the big news earlier this week. An hydrogen station blew up in Norway. No significant injuries or anything. There was one vehicle, which some people are saying is a Model X, but I couldn't confirm that. Someone in a Model X close, or a type of vehicle that it's not a hydrogen vehicle, that was close to the station when it exploded. The force of the explosion was so strong that it triggered the airbag inside the vehicle, and there were some injuries for that. But that's the extent of the injuries. But still, it was a massive explosion. Of course, it's a hydrogen explosion. And it of course, put a bad name on hydrogen in Norway, which was a somewhat significant market for hydrogen because it's hard to take up in many places. But they had a ton of refueling stations. Not have a ton, but more than the average market. And the owner of the station, or the operator of the station, UnoX Hydrogen, closed all the temporary closed all their station after the explosion until they can determine the cause, the exact cause of the explosion here. And then because of that, Toyota and Hyundai, the two automakers that are still very much embedded in hydrogen technology, and the only people that the only automakers that do sell hydrogen fuel cell cars in Norway, they altered their sales because if all those stations are closing, then there's no way to refuel their cars. So they altered their sales, and for the current owners of the Mare and the, I think the Hyundai is the Nexo hydrogen car, they are offering them loaners, gas-powered loaners.
Really? Or, gas? Well,
maybe.
They don't give.
I thought so. That's what I heard.
In Norway?
Yeah, they should definitely do electric, but or hybrid at the very least. Though those companies, well, for Toyota, it's not going to be electric for sure. Or it's going to be a plug-in prime. They don't have an all-electric car. Hyundai could do the Ioniq, maybe. We'll see. Or they do. They have been delivering a lot of Kona too. Right. So put them in a Kona. Kona EV, of course, because there's also a Kona gasoline version. So what? The question, of course, is does it spell finally the end for that weird hydrogen fuel cell experiment that we've been running? Because, of course, the hydrogen fuel cells are more efficient than gasoline cars. That's great. But they're so much less efficient than battery electric vehicles that it feels like investing in hydrogen fuel cell right now is just slowing down the EV adoption. So it's actually a detriment to keep pushing that, because there's no way it's going to win over battery electric. It's just the entire supply chain is just way less efficient than combining renewable energy with battery electric vehicles.
Yeah, and hydrogen kind of keeps the same problems that gasoline has, in that, well, two of the big ones. One is transporting it around. It's not easy to create hydrogen, so plants have to make hydrogen and then ship it off to a gas station or a refueling station. And then the other thing is making hydrogen isn't always that clean. I mean, of course, you can make hydrogen with solar, but most hydrogen, I believe, is produced at kind of dirty plants that use fossil fuels. So doesn't really fix any of the problems with gasoline if you're making hydrogen with fossil fuels.
It's still more efficient than burning it inside the car. But yeah, you're right. It's the entire efficiency process is so much more.
And it may make sense in some edge cases for for the trucking industry, or like if you're driving some kind of vehicle to the North Pole or something, then you need a lot of fuel and a lot of miles, and hydrogen can provide that because it's very high energy density and it's obviously very light. But for the lion's share, the 99% of other vehicles, battery electric just makes a lot more sense.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. So we'll see what the impact of that big setback for hydrogen is going to have on the industry going forward. Staying in Europe right now, Nordvolt is really happening now. Really happening. We've been reporting on them for a while now because they sort of spun out of Tesla, really, because they were started by two supply chain executives at Tesla that saw a need for another gigafactory in Europe, and they decided to make it themselves instead of doing it at Tesla, and they started the company Nordvolt to make a battery cell gigafactory in Europe. They ended up doing it in Sweden, and they raised a bunch of money over the last 2 years, and they secured the land, they secured the investment to make a pilot production plant. But now this week they announced that they secured a whole $1 billion to make the actual gigafactory, which is going to happen now. That $1 billion coming from mostly Volkswagen, but also some investment from Goldman Sachs, BMW, and a few others. On top of that investment, which is going to secure their own gigafactory, they also made a partnership with Volkswagen for a joint venture, a 50-50% joint venture, for a 60-gigawatt-hour battery cell gigafactory. So there's two gigafactories that are going to happen as part of that deal. So great news for the European market in terms of battery cell production. They, of course, we assume that they're going to mostly supply Volkswagen's growing need for battery cells as they expand their ambitious electric vehicle plans. But then with maybe with BMW's investment, probably they're going to want some part of that too. And probably others, because $1 billion plus that 16 gigawatt hours, I think they're probably going to, looks like they're going to aim for 40 to 50 gigawatt hours of capacity within the next 5 years. That's significant. I mean, it's still not what Tesla and Panasonic are doing right now in factory, so it's not that big, but it's still a big deal.
Yeah, and I think this whole thing is kind of born out of the idea that Volkswagen and the other EV manufacturers were just going to outsource the batteries to LG and Samsung, and I think they're finding that that doesn't work at scale. It's good for small scale production, but when you need to order, you know, for a large scale kind of vehicle, the price fluctuations maybe there's some collusion that the battery manufacturers kind of have the power over everyone else because the demand's so high. So I think they're learning what Tesla learned, I don't know, what, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when they decided to do the Gigafactory. Tesla knew that the current battery supply wasn't going to be even close to being able to handle their needs. So they went out and started their own production.
Let's go back to your point that Tesla is always 5 years ahead of of the legacy of the makers.
Yes, I need to write this post because it bothers me because, you know, every time I drive, like right now I'm driving a Land Rover plug-in hybrid, and Land Rover, I believe, maybe 10 years behind. But the other manufacturer.
Land Rover is Jaguar. Land Rover is Jaguar. They have the high pace.
Yeah, this.
Which the high pace is probably 3 years behind. So.
Yeah, maybe. But this particular car I'm driving now is at least 5 years behind. It's kind of like the Mitsubishi Outlander, in that you can't even tell that it's an EV, which I guess some people would appreciate.
But the Outlander has like 40 kilometers range or something like that.
I think it's in the 30s. The way it works, you can't control when the electricity, you know, when it goes on electric or internal combustion. Anyway, that review is coming up. It's a beautiful car. Wish it was all EV. Anyway, back to the batteries. Tesla knew ahead of time. The other companies, like Volkswagen, is kind of the, you know, I would say second best to Tesla in terms of electric car ambitions. They're kind of learning those lessons that Tesla learned 5 years ago right now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Speaking of another company that's a little bit behind, Honda. Honda, they do have the beautiful Clarity, best electric car ever made, if you're blind. And they're coming up with something cooler right now, the Honda He, some kind of a city EV, which at least looks cool.
Looks cool.
But now we're learning more about the specs. They released more about the powertrain this week. And they do come out with their whole skateboard light platform, which is nice for like a little car like that. It's going to be great. Though the specs are a little bit limited. They released the 30, it's going to be a 35.5 kilowatt hour battery pack. It's going to be good for, they say, 200 kilometers of range, 125 miles.
That's NEDC, though.
That's NEDC?
I think so. It's definitely not EPA.
I mean, with 35.5 kilowatt hour, I mean, you could, I wouldn't be surprised if, well, it's only going to be for the European market yet, so probably just NEDC then. Though I feel like 35.5...
should be able to get them.
It's conservative. Yeah, conservative at 125 miles, I think.
I mean, a good example
is for a small car, like
the Ioniq,
unless
the Ioniq has 28 kilowatt hours and it goes 125 so miles.
Yeah, but it's a freak of efficiency right. there. Ioniq. I'm not sure that's going to be the case here for the Honda. For a city car, still makes sense. Never mind. Depends on the pricing. So when they release the pricing, that's what we're going to know if it makes sense or not. Because right now, in the like $30,000 range car, you can get things that are, I think, a little bit bigger and have longer range. So if they can bring that to like maybe 25,000 range, like even maybe 20,000 euros would be like something between 20,000-25,000 euros.
That would be nice.
I think would make sense. Yeah. That would be okay. Other than that, I think they won't find a great market for it, other than for the fact that it looks like a nice city car, which is not always the case for those little EVs.
One nice thing that they did include is the Rapid Boost, which, you know, needs quotation marks, which is just CCS combo, DC fast charging. And like most other cars, it can get to 80% in 30 minutes, which, you know, if you're parking on the sidewalk, or not on the sidewalk, on the side of the street, most city dwellers don't have their own garage. It's nice to have the DC fast charging option.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice.
Yeah. That's coming out later this year, right? The car is coming out. Production is starting later this year.
Yeah, production later this year. Probably realistically beginning of next year. The one weird thing I saw, it has water cooling for the batteries, I saw. Did you see that?
Yeah, water cooled battery.
Not liquid cooled. Water yeah. cooled. That to me, like if I'm in Norway and it's like negative 30 degrees, I don't know if I want water cooling in my batteries. Like that would.
You think it's gonna freeze?
I don't know. Maybe. Put some glycol in there.
I don't know of that. Might be like a translation problem.
That's true.
Yeah. Honda is a Japanese company, though. I feel like they sell enough cars in the English markets that they should know better. But so it might really be water cool. Would be a first for an electric car, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
All right. We're going to look forward to that. Oh, yeah. They also they had 31,000 people that expressed interest for it. So, but those are not reservation. Expressed interest, I think, is just like clicking a button or something.
Yeah, it's just like put your email address in there and tell me when there's updates.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily a reservation with a deposit, for example, which I think show clearer diamond for it. 31,000. It's similar to the Volkswagen ID, I think, but Volkswagen, I think they do require the deposit. And I think it has a much longer range. And I think it's in the 30,000, at least around 30,000 euros range.
Yeah, the ID is a much more compelling product to me.
Yeah. ID3. European market is going to be much more interesting from the EV side. They're going to get a ton of new models in the next year, in the next 2 years especially. Unfortunately, we won't get the most of them here in North America. Probably need to do some kind of European tour or something and go check all those vehicles out when they come out.
That's a great idea.
Over the next 12 months. Yeah, that'll be fun. All right. Thanks a lot for listening, everyone. Thanks a lot for watching on YouTube, and subscribe if you haven't already, and do the same on your podcast app. Do appreciate it. I'm going to see you same place, same time next week. Ciao.